Good morning. I want to convene this morning's informational meeting, Joint Legislative Task Force on County Payments. I believe it's Wednesday, the 21st of February, on a rainy February morning. Glad everyone is up and going. Senator Verger is going to be a little bit behind this morning, and so I'm going to temporarily chair. And then at some point, Co-Speaker Roblin and I are leaving for another meeting, so we're going to shift out of that, but so everyone understands that. I'd like to welcome everyone, and please come to the dais, Mike MacArthur, Paul Barnum, Brett Brownscombe, and Bruce Doc Savage from Ochoco Lumber.
Mike, you have an order you'd like to
proceed in, or?
I'll lead off, Mr. Co-Chair, and
thank you.
Introduce the panel as we go. So Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties, co-chairs, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to talk about the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Work Group and the project that we've got going. You recall that the Federal Forest Payments and County Services Task Force said that we have to go at this problem at least three different ways. There's three legs of this stool, and we've talked about some of the financial issues before: the local contribution, the state contribution. The other big one is, what can we do in the forest? And to that end, Governor Kulongowski appointed the Federal Forest Advisory Committee. The Federal Forest Advisory Committee came up with a set of recommendations, and then Oregon Solutions stepped in and began a project around those recommendations to see what we could do with those. And that created the implementation work group. And we've been meeting for at least a couple of years talking about how to move projects forward on federal forest. And we've worked a lot with collaboratives, and we've developed methods to help collaboratives. We've raised resources. We have a wide range of stakeholders at the table, all those the environmental groups, the Nature Conservancy, Sustainable Northwest, we have the industry, we have the Forest Service, we have BLM, and from that has grown an idea about how to make progress on federal forest, incrementally at least. And this panel today is here to talk to you about a specific idea that has grown out of the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Work Group. So we have Brett Brownscombe, who's with the Governor's Office, the convener of the group, and we have Bruce Doc Savage, who's with Ochoco Timber, and we have Paul Barnum, Oregon Forest Resources Institute. So I'm going to turn it over to Brett now, who's going to talk a little bit about the how the work group is constituted and how it operates.
Thank you. Good morning, Brett, and if you'll identify yourself when you get started, please.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike, and Co-Chair Hannah, members of the committee. My name is Brett Brownscombe. I'm with Governor Kitzhaber's office. I serve as the Natural Resource Policy Advisor and work in particular on forest issues. So what I wanted to get into today is the reason why we're here, which is to bring your attention to work that's coming out of the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Work Group, and specifically an economic assessment for increased work on federal forest lands, national forest lands in particular, on the dry side of the state, east side, as well as the southern portion of the state, in the communities that that are at most at risk of catastrophic fire, and that are at most at risk of losing additional mill infrastructure, jobs, and social fabric that has already declined to fairly alarming levels. So in particular, we're looking to advance this economic study to provide information that we feel is going to be critical to the state's conversation about where it wants to head and the potential economic benefits that could accrue from increased state role in federal forest management. What I wanted to do first is recognize that on the ONC land issue, the BLM lands that I know this committee is focused more on in particular, that remains a high priority of the governor. We are advancing an additional staffer to work primarily on that issue in particular. We feel it's critical. It's growing to an increasingly critical stage. So what we intend to do is move quickly on the hire and bring folks together to that we feel is going to be needed to get to a solution that can move in both the House and the Senate in Washington, D.C. And so, you know, the governor's vision for this is not solely focused on Let's just reauthorize county payments and secure rural schools. The solution that we're envisioning is a management solution that gets at a broad approach to supporting revenues for counties, getting increased economic benefits in the ONC counties, and dealing with conservation values as well. Today, what I'm here to talk to you about in the rest of the panel here is the national forest counties outside of those BLM lands, some of which are in the southern Oregon counties that also contain BLM lands, many of which are in the east, are on the east side of the state. In those counties, you also have unemployment that is upwards of 15%. You have declines, you've seen declines in forest health to the point where habitat complexity has been lost, resilience to fire has been lost, and resilience to insects has been lost. So there's a need for a variety of reasons, including environmental, economic, and then social. These are also communities that, in addition to having lost mail infrastructure, have seen declines, as you well know, in school enrollment and other pieces of the social fabric. So where we are as a Federal Forest Advisory Committee and in the handouts that you have background on the committee itself, the mission of the committee, what we're focused on doing, and that primary focus is to serve landscape-level forest health restoration that puts people back to work, increases jobs, and increases the resilience of federal forest lands on the dry side, in the dry parts, I should say, of the state. The committee is diverse. There are representatives of local government, state government, represented by state agencies, represented by the Department of Forestry, the federal government, represented by the Forest Service, and then supporting partners. I convened the entity from the governor's office. We are working to move the action plan forward that the committee adopted in 2011. There are supporting partners in the form of Oregon Business Council, the Nature Conservancy, Oregon Forest Resource Institute, and a variety of others that really make this a diverse body of voices who we feel are critical to moving forward collectively on federal land. Where we are with what we have to you or to bring before you today is what we feel is an important piece of moving towards a larger solution on federal forest lands. The collaboratives that exist across the state, and we're poised to have forest collaboratives working in by the end of this year, every dry side national forest. Those collaboratives are advancing a significant amount of forest restoration work. We've moved from volume outputs in the tens of thousands of board feet to hundreds of thousands of board feet. Where those collaboratives are, however, and where the governor's office is and the entirety of the FFAC is that's not enough, and we need to scale up the effort of the collaboratives to really get to the need and the scale of the environmental and the economic conditions that pose problems for rural communities and those dry side forests. So to get to that scale, we've had some success recently in about a $6.8 million grant award from the Federal Collaborative Forest Restoration Act and the program under that act, which Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Act, which will advance efforts to scale up forest restoration work, jobs, timber products, and ecological gains on the Malheur, Fremont Wainema, and the Deschutes National Forest on the dry side. So there's progress, but I think the bottom line before I turn it over to Bruce and Paul is that looking into the future, we know that this is a time of scarce budgets. There's a need if the state really wants to, and these are points the governor has made in his address to the Board of Forestry in November last year, as well as more recently in testimony on House Bill 4098 related to state forest lands. If we really want to focus on the large percentage of the landscape, the 60% roughly of Oregon's forest lands that are federal national forest lands, we need to focus attention on covering the gap that will likely continue to exist between the amount of funding the Forest Service has and the capacity of the Forest Service to get the job done at the scale that's needed. The gap between the existing level of capacity and funding with the Forest Service and the scale of the need. So where we are on this is a variety of partners have put together funding. We're not here to ask you for dollars. We're here to ask you for support in advancing an economic assessment that essentially poses the question, if we could double management efforts on the federal forest landscape to anywhere up to 500,000 million board feet a year, what would that look like in terms of the economic benefits that would create in terms of jobs, product, and other social benefits to rural communities from that level of work, and then present facts from that assessment to you and the remainder of the legislative body to have a conversation around the state's role in the federal forest management issue. That's why we're here, and without talking any more about it, you have a copy of the draft letter. The intent would be to get the support of this committee and ensure that the proposed approach on this assessment is bipartisan, that it's which is the nature of the FPAC itself, but we also would like to see this as an effort that the legislature is supporting. And that would move into an RFP that would go out to contractors to then perform this economic assessment with a report back in November of 2012. So with that framing of this, I'll turn it over to you, Bruce, to speak to your part of this and reserve any time for questions at the end.
So, Brett, I'm going to take a pause for a moment. Senator Cruz has a question. So
yeah, actually, Mr. Chair, more of a comment, Brett. I reading the letter where it says basically a century of suppressing natural wildfires has produced unhealthy forest. I would suggest that should be expanded to a lack of proper forest management has really led to the place we're at, rather than just a forest fire issue. And I would suggest that you kind of look at maybe broadening that statement to be slightly more inclusive than just the forest fire portion.
Senator Girod?
Actually, Brett, you and I talked about this briefly. The Senate, the federal Senate, has offered to start at the 25% level and ratchet down four more ratchets, which just is absolutely going to be catastrophic for us. Two-thirds of the mills are now closed, 50,000 jobs lost. We got a problem not just with ONC, but we have a problem with fire. Is there going to come a point when I just feel like the state needs to actually sue the federal government, and is that a possibility, and are we going to start looking at that? Because I think they're in violation of their contracts.
So, Co-Chair Hanna, Senator Girod and Senator Cruz, first, to the letter and members of the committee, the letter is still very much in draft form, and so I think point taken on the need to make sure it recognizes the variety of reasons why forest health is where it is. So we'll get that edit made. And Senator Girod, on the issue of suing the federal government, I don't know what the claim, the legality of the claim would be. It's something that could be looked into, certainly. I think the key issue, though, is recognizing what you said, and that county payments and just reauthorizing county payments is not a long-term solution on this, and that there's a need to get to management and management that produces product, jobs, and forest health benefits that we're not getting at today at the current scale of management.
Just a follow up. It's not just the ONC, it's the fire risk as well. And so you have private landowners and the state that it assumes a higher fire risk because the federal government's become kind of a slumlord of the forests. So I think that that's a valid place to start too. So I think there's an ONC legal argument, and I think there's a fire argument as well. And I just think that the federal government hasn't played ball, and I don't see any indication that they are going to play ball. And I really believe that we got to up the ante a little bit or just take what they give us, and that's not going to be much.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the approach appears to be to encourage collaboration and also to provide support for an economic assessment. But the evidence that collaboration produces a significant way forward to wood mills that are closed isn't there. You know, the you characterized it as tens of thousands have been converted to hundreds of thousands. But in point of fact, to open the two closed mills in Grant County, each of those mills needs 50 million board feet minimum. You know, the three mills that were operating in Grant County, between the two of them, have a minimum need of 150 million board feet. That's for one shift. You know, if you, and one shift is barely enough to keep that mill open, those, any of those mills. So the collaboration effort that we're aiming at really underestimates the fact that the environmental organizations that participate refuse to allow merch timber to be the objective of collaboration. And without merchantable timber of the right diameter and species and length, mills can't operate. So collaboration is a thing that makes us feel better as counties are going broke. And another economic study, there's no connection between outputs from the Forest Service and inputs of cash. You know, we severed that back in the late or middle 90s. So more money from the federal government to federal agencies, ostensibly to do more work, doesn't mean more merchantable timber will come off the land. It'll mean that the Forest Service does more studies and more assessment work, but doesn't necessarily guarantee there'll be sufficient wood for maintaining the minimums that the mills require. So I guess what I'm asking you is, if all we're doing is highlighting collaboration, what evidence do you have that collaboration's actually wood at a mill anywhere?
Senator Farrelly, the intent here is not to simply highlight collaboration, but rather the economic benefits of doing increased management work. And so the you are, I think, touching on the reality of significant frustration with the Forest Service and the history of environmental organizations and appeals and litigation, severing the bond of trust between people living in rural communities, timber interests, local government, and the state. And so where we are with this, and I will, with all due respect, allow Bruce to speak more to what the collaborative in Grant County has done, and what it's meant to your mill interests there. But where we are with this is recognizing that what you said is true. There's a need that's greater than the current level of management. The recent, the aim of this letter and this assessment is not to go to the Forest Service or the federal government and simply ask for more money. The aim is to have a longer-term conversation based on an economic study that gives us some facts with this body around what the state's desired role is in getting to the outcomes that we really want on federal forest lands. And the governor is very committed on moving that forward. I think he's articulated it in a variety of conversations, the Board of Forestry speech and the recent testimony on House Bill 4098, that he sees the federal forest lands on the dry side as the place to get additional volume, additional jobs, and where the mill infrastructure is most at risk of collapsing. And so the recent awards from the federal government based on the local collaborative's proposals has been, the 10-year outlook on this is to treat 40 or 400,000 acres or above. And so the real focus here is to recognize that there is a need for a larger scale. The collaborators are committed to getting there. We need to figure out how to get them there. The reason it's presented in a collaborative context is that's been the area where we've seen success in moving forward on increases, albeit not as large of increases in management as I think we would all like, but increases in management on the federal forest landscape without litigation. So things are moving forward in a way that's producing jobs and getting beyond the social gridlock on this, and we want to scale that up.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Senator Farioli.
I don't think there's a hearing room between here and Washington, D.C., where it hasn't been demonstrated ad nauseum that additional outputs from the forest would be beneficial to communities. Is there anything new in this economic assessment that couldn't be assembled from work that's been done for the last decade?
I think Co-Chair Hanna, Senator Farioli, I believe we'll touch on that more when Paul from Oregon Forest Resources Institute speaks, but yes, I think there is information that can be added from this assessment to what's already known. I mean, there's a general sense that we do more management, we get more benefit out of federal forest lands in terms of economic and social and environmental benefit on habitat. What the study can do is, I think, quantify in more specific terms what it would look like if we were to carve out an approach to investing in doing X number of 100 million board feet a year, up to 500,000, what that would translate to in terms of jobs in a more specific way than I think has been done. There have been pieces of this done, but there hasn't been anything collectively assembled. And again, through the Federal Forest Advisory Committee, we've had conversations through monthly convened meetings on this where there is now support for doing this and funding it, not from anything we're asking from you, but funding it through commitments from individual entities on the Federal Forest Advisory Committee to move this assessment forward as a critical ground piece to what the Oregon Business Council and others are recognizing as the place we need to go in federal forests. So those entities have all recognized that there's a critical need for this, and I think we will be able to produce something that's of value beyond just the general recognition that more management will mean more benefit.
Thank you, Brett. I want to run through just a couple items that I see. I know the letter is in a draft form, but I tend to agree with Senator Cruz that simply saying a century of suppressing natural wildfires has produced overcrowded, unhealthy forests is very short-sighted. And I know it's just a draft, but I could see a lot of forest professionals in the room who would be shaking their head just saying it's hard to imagine a group that's going to request of the legislature help in writing a letter to be supported by us would miss the mark so badly on that. I mean, I'm not sure anybody sitting at this table believes it's forest fire suppression that is the problem. And I could be speaking broadly, but I'm just saying that. In the next paragraph, caused by past cycles of grazing or timber harvest practices or having missed one or more historic fire cycles about forest health. Again, if you would have asked the people in this room the top 10 reasons that we got a problem on the national forests, I could be wrong. I'm just not sure that grazing would be in the top 10, and I might be off the mark. In the next paragraph, you use the term harvesting merchantable timber in overstocked lands. Why does it have to be overstocked to harvest merchantable timber? And why would we describe it that way? I mean, we have this national treasure. We have an Oregon treasure in resources. And I don't know why we would use that terminology. I really don't. I can't understand it. And the more I look at the letter, I'm just perplexed by that. I guess there's a word in here that I thought one group really coined, but now I see you all are using it. And we've traded the word, in my mind, harvest for treatment. I don't know. Maybe you're going to have help us with that definition, because treatment is a different word. I grew up talking about logging, and then I think it went to harvest, and now somehow we've got this word treatment. Maybe treatment includes harvest and thinning and whatever. But let's define that, if you would, for us when you come back at the at this.
Co-Chair Hannah.
Treating we use just a couple of more times. And then lastly, I would just say, as we get to the back page, completed no later than November 19, 2012, and talk about it at the Oregon Leadership Summit and come back in February of 2013. This is where I tend to agree with Senator Farrioli that we've tested it to death. There seems to be very little disagreement about, but we have a problem and we're going to spend another year talking about it is frustrating. Senator.
Mr. Co-Speaker, I'm wondering if we use the term, as Senator Cruz said, about management as a pre-entry statement before these others, because it sounds to me what this letter was attempting to do was maybe talk about the certain things that have occurred that are actually within the broader sense of management, that how it's been defined by the federal government. And it would seem to me that if you took some phrase and put in there after the second or on the second paragraph, but we have a problem, and then, as Senator Cruz says, make it broader and then use some of these things as examples as to the parts of the management. At least that's what I'm taking away from what this group was trying to be more specific, but maybe you need to start general framework and then have these as modifiers.
Thank you, Senator. And I think that the good news here, this is a draft, and it's our opportunity to comment back and just throw some ideas out there, and I appreciate everyone being able to do that.
And Co-Chair Hannah, by all means, this is just a draft.
Yeah.
I think Bruce and Paula can speak to it a bit more, but there's every desire in the world on the FAC to work with this committee on making sure that the content of the letter is what you would want to see in order to garner your support. The intent is to focus on clearly the lack of management is the issue, and how we get the language right to express that.
Thank you. Senator Johnson?
We'll work on that.
First, colleagues, let me apologize. I was testifying on a bill. on the back side of the second page of the letter, the determining the cost of such an assessment and then raise the funds from a diverse cross-section of Oregon-based organizations to pay for it. This is to pay for the study, and we're going to be looking to Oregon's philanthropic sector to pay for this?
Co-Chair Hannah, Senator Johnson, the costs are to pay, or the language in the letter is to pay, yes, for the study itself. The commitment already exists to the tune of $60,000 from, the Nature Conservancy, Oregon Forest Resources Institute, Oregon Business Council, Association of Oregon Counties. And then we are working currently with within the governor's office, the Department of Forestry, OEB, Department of Energy, to compile the remaining funds, as well as with non-governmental entities. So it would not be an ask for additional money. It would be drawing from commitments from outside sources as well as existing funds that are available right now.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. I apologize if you've already covered this, but who sets the table, I think, will speak very directly to the credibility of whatever report is produced at whatever cost. And who would be the appointing authority that the working that would create the working group that would do all of these things at whatever cost? And who's going to do this solicitation to the philanthropic organizations and make the case that they ought to be doing this? I mean, I can think of some of the philanthropic organizations that would probably be top on everybody's list, and they are there by virtue of timber and forest products. And so I'm just trying to figure out who sets the table, and does the governor go and ask for the money? I just am trying to understand how this would work.
Co-Chair Hannah and Senator Johnson, so thank you for that. So this allows to clarify this, this is why we're here. We feel that with this committee's endorsement and endorsement by leadership, both the Republican and the Democratic side, as well as the governor's office, that will give in a charge, basically a charge to the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Work Group to move forward in advancing this RFP. So the Implementation Work Group would be the entity that puts the RFP out. The call for this and the push for this to do this study would be coming from the legislative leadership, the governor's office, and we would expect overseen by the governor's office and legislative leadership, but advanced through the existing structure of the implementation work group. And once the if we have that support, essentially we feel that we'll be able to raise money to complete the rest of the funding need for this a lot easier if we have bipartisan support from the top of the state directing the implementation work group that, yes, this is clearly a problem on the federal forest lands. It needs to be addressed, and we want to see action on this.
Mr. Chair, one more follow-up, if you'll indulge me. I've gotten kind of lost in all of the different working groups, the Federal Forest Land Working Group, the Implementation Working Group. Does the Implementation Working Group exist?
Yes, it does.
And who is the appointing authority for that?
The governor's office. And so I convened the group as staff to the governor's office. The Oregon Solutions is the entity that facilitates the group, and then the members to my right and to the left and the chairs in the back are members of the implementation work group.
Okay. One last comment. I'm just thinking about the bruising discussion that we had in the earlier part of this session about appointments to the Board of Forestry, and I, recalling that, am trying to think of how you set the table so that all the various interests think that they have gotten a fair shake at the process. And if we end up with a table set that is just like this again, we will take another year to think about it, and perhaps nothing happens.
Hey, Co-Chair Hannon, Senator Johnson, that's the we believe we have that within this implementation work group. It's been meeting for a number of years now, and in supporting the collaboratives on the ground that are getting beyond the gridlock. We also have, I think, the right balance of entities on the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Work Group that will give everybody comfort that they were not cut out of this and that they have a voice in this. It's a very diverse body of interest that I think Paul and Bruce could speak to more.
Let me get to one more question. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're hopping over a fact that might be obvious to legislators, but not obvious to bureaucrats, and that is this committee has the authority to find fact. This committee could assemble the information that's been previously presented by the Oregon Forest Industries Council and any one of a myriad other groups and organizations that does exactly the kind of analysis and has for years that's being described as in the future tense. We could do the finding of facts. We could deem the conditions that we found. We could, in fact, make clear recommendations for the federal government and for state agencies. And this group is a bipartisan group spread across a wide political spectrum, philosophically not aligned necessarily with any particular groups, but with the interests of the state at heart. This is exactly the committee to do the finding of facts. So if we want to bureaucratize this thing and kick the can and have five or six committees take a good hard look at this thing and negotiate with ourselves to write a sharply worded letter that will arrive 2 years from now, this is a great plan. But we could cut through a lot of this stuff and come up with pretty strong recommendations for moving forward on a landscape basis with a stewardship agreements or a trust relationship. That's what's needed here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Bruce, are you prepared to introduce yourself and get started?
Sure. Good morning, committee members and co-chairs. My name is Bruce Doc Savage. I'm the president of Ochoa Lumber Company. We're a family-owned timber company, sawmill company, established in the 1920s. We've been cutting timber since 1939 nonstop. We have an existing mill and a biomass conversion facility in John Day, Oregon. I also serve as a director of the Oregon Business Council, and as most of you know, the Oregon Business Council is a statewide business association of CEOs that are formed to improve Oregon's health and Oregon's economy and quality of life. Part of the report that we hope to gather from this information will be presented at the Leadership Summit in December. It is part of the so-called Oregon Business Plan agenda. Now, this study, from what I understand, is a document that will look at the economic benefit of restoring 500,000 acres. I didn't see any board footage numbers, but if there are more, I'd be very happy to see that number, but that's not the case, I think. We are planning on restoring up to 500,000 acres of sick and unhealthy federal forests. I think as a business person and as one of the only existing sawmills in Eastern Oregon, that a quantitative and a qualitative analysis of the economic environmental impact of such treatment logging, we need to verify some assumptions that are out there that good forestry practices truly create new job opportunities while increasing the health of the forest. I believe this study will help us attempt to gather data for cost and benefit analysis. The study should be presented back to the FFAC, the independent body made up of numerous people. I think you've got a list of who is on that committee. You know, when you do an audit, and I believe this is an audit of the numbers, you want an independent auditor, you want a CPA firm, you want someone that has no bias one way or the other, if that's possible. And I think that's why this FFAC IWG committee that's made up of a broad spectrum of interest groups is the one that'll give us a true picture of what's going on out there. The governor and the Western Governors Associations has pushed Congress to support over $40 million in annual federal funding for collaborative forest landscape restoration programs. So what I'm saying is we've gotten the money, $40 million. Just recently, the Blue Mountain Forest Partners will receive $2.4 million to invest in the Blue Mountain areas to do additional work on the ground. These are real jobs. They are not timber harvest jobs. They are jobs for forest health. And I'll get a little bit into that in a minute. But my hope is that you'll support this investment to help us analyze these costs and benefits on the federal forest restoration so we can put some of our local people back to work in our communities in Eastern Oregon, because we really believe this will be a long-term benefit. As a landowner, we own 40,000 acres. I'm also very, very worried about the federal forests that surround us, the bug infestations and the fires. We can't insure those forests. Our forests, we feel, are very healthy, sustainable harvesting, and I'm very concerned about this. The reason why we believe, as an industry, that we need this study is to verify some assumptions that people have out there, like the bureaucrats, that they can put $5 in per acre to create jobs, to do something that's impossible to do. We want to tell them, this is what it's going to cost. This is what it has cost, and here's the jobs that are being created. My assumption is, on 500,000 acres, Senator Farioli's comments, which are duly respected and needed regarding the harvest of, we call it round and saw timber, so that we can get the mills going again, is that on 500,000 acres, we may be able to create at 1,500 board feet an acre of 75 million board feet of timber, saw timber. We also need the fiber for these so-called biomass and biomass conversion facilities similar to what we have. We created 12 jobs in the last couple of months. They are not the jobs necessarily that we would want in sawmills, but they'll do for the time being. They've gotten us through since 1939. We're not the same company we were in 1939, and the industry isn't the same. But we need to get something going over there, and we need to prove that the cost and benefit is there. And we can do that with the research that will be done on this particular study, and so therefore we support it. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Please proceed. Introduce yourself.
I'm Paul Barnum. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. We became a signatory to the Memorandum of Understanding as part of this FFAC thing 3 years ago, and we've been playing a communication role and an education role, trying to help the public and others understand the magnitude of the federal forest problem. I say federal forest, really what we're talking about here is national forest, mainly those east of the Cascade Crest, and then the eastern portion of the Rogue Siskiyou Forest. Through the FFAC process, we are trying to keep it open and transparent. We are trying to involve all of the people who think they have a voice in this. It's a very much a collaborative process. And that is the way, Senator Johnson, that the RFP would be constructed. The Department of Energy has already agreed to be the convener, if you will. So the RFP would be an official state RFP overseen by the Department of Energy. We would have a steering committee comprised of members of the FFAC to oversee this work. In the scope of work, we're calling for peer group review and that would be decided upon by the FFAC steering committee and the contractor in terms of who would actually be the peer reviewers to make sure that we had a bona fide good document at the end of the process. I think and I speak for basically Russ Hoflick, who could not be here this morning from the Nature Conservancy. Their board has authorized $20,000 toward this study. My board, the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, we're funded by a tax on harvest, has dedicated $20,000 for this study. I think the reason that there's so much passion behind this is that while we all wish that our congressional delegation would come up with a solution for Oregon's national forests and for our ONC forests as well, we realize that is exceedingly difficult to do. We've been trying to do it for a long time. And even these new bills that are out currently, we're not sure that those will go through. So at some point, you have to kind of take matters into your own hands. We published a special report, for example, and Governor Kulongoski, who organized the FFAC in the first place, he said at some point this becomes a state's right issue. How long are you going to allow the federal government to mismanage the national forests that are in your state? So we think by taking a logical, practical approach, developing an economic assessment that will show the true cost and benefit of doing this work, we can bring that back to people such as yourself and say, okay, here's what it costs, here's the benefits of it, here are the jobs that could be restored, here are the people we could take off unemployment, here are the food stamps that we wouldn't have to be paying out. And then it would be up to the legislature to say, okay, maybe we can do something about this on our own. Or maybe you take the study back to the federal government and use that. But that's still, as we know, that's difficult work to try and get legislation passed that affects one state. So it's not the answer. I think there's multiple paths that I think we need to pursue, a lawsuit, Senator Girard, suing the federal government. Yeah, bring that on. Let's work with the congressional delegation. Do that. But I think this, a modest investment, which we think would be about $100,000, funded by outside sources, could give us some of the facts and data that we need to make a compelling argument to you folks, to federal government, to whoever, this is what we can do, this is how we can do it.
Thank you very much for your testimony, co-speaker.
Thank you very much. I'm one of those people who believes that we should, in fact, redraft this letter and send a letter in support for a number of reasons. I had the opportunity at the Oregon Business Summit to be on a panel with some other people, including the Nature Conservancy, and watched the process that's been happening. And from my perspective, I believe we should be harvesting more and making our forests safer from fire, but also producing the timber that we need, and I believe we can do that in a sustainable way. Your family is showing that and has shown it, that they've had their own private property. They are harvesting that in a sustainable fashion. The testimony in the panel I thought was impressive because I was sitting there with the Nature Conservancy and others who have agreed and worked with the federal foresters on their federal forest land in these cooperatives to actually move forward, treat the land, harvest the timber, whatever you want to call it, without lawsuits and within the range of things that they can do. Every one of the people who were there, whether it were the Nature Conservancy or the others, said, we're not moving fast enough. I mean, it was clear that they have begun a process which says, we have to push this a little farther. We are not going to outwork the forest fires. We're not going to outwork the problems that are already there if we don't pick up the speed. And we would like to do that without lawsuits, without the other things, because we have put enough people in the room that agree. I am impressed with the work you've done, considering how little we've been able to do anywhere in the United States with respect to forest health. And so I am one of those people who says, commend you for the work you've done so far. I commend the governor for going to the Board of Forestry and having his speech that he gave to them that put forward work. A number of years ago when I was the ag chair, I worked hard on making sure that we stopped doing the consensus and got to an up and down vote in the Forestry Service, and I think that's been working better. We need to understand, and we need to bring other people along in that understanding, that doing this work will make it better ecologically, economically, and socially in these areas, including the west side. We haven't got there yet, except for the part down in Ashland, where you've got one going right now, which I am impressed with. But Curry County could use it. We could start having a cooperative there tomorrow if we could get people to agree in the Forest Service to work with us to make some timber harvest happening down there. So I commend the work you've done. I want to support this kind of a process where you gather the information, you share it with people, and you change the minds, because that's the only way we're going to ever work with the Congress. I commend DeFazio and our delegation that has a plan out there that I think is a good plan, and I think we need to work on that as well on this committee. But for me, I want to say I want to support this. I appreciate being invited and talking at the Business Summit, because I think it was nice to start seeing people working together, and it was interesting to find out in that particular setting that one of the people who set up his own sawmill down in on the east side was actually from Coos Bay, and I always like to have these connections with different people, and I had known his father for a long time. So it was an interesting experience, and I commend the work that's been happening. It does need to move faster. We do need to get into those forests that are really unhealthy for all the reasons we've mentioned here. Mismanagement of it. I mean, they used the fire, and I understand why the fire, you put it there, because they used fire as the reason they didn't do anything. I mean, we have to get back in the forest doing the things that we know make it a healthier place for all of us. So from my perspective, let's redraft the letter. We can have Beth work on that and bring it back to us, and then get support to this group that's doing it. They're not asking for us to pay anything. They just want to do their job and move forward, and I think our help can help them with that. Let's get out of the litigation process and get on to the clearing these forests and making them healthier and taking it off this huge forest. I mean, if you've looked at any of the maps that show the forests burning across our state, it's frightening to me. And if you really understand the forest, it is Eastern Oregon that is really at risk, but it's also Southern Oregon. The Biscuit Fire and all those, that's the channel they come through with those storms. And we've got to figure out a way to stop having the forests that are owned by the federal government be the tinderboxes for the state. So I just hope we can support this effort and support other efforts and keep moving the ball in ways that bring a lot of people together, because we had not gotten any movement until these cooperatives started. So I commend your efforts. That's for me. And I would move that we support a letter. I think we need to redraft it, but that's where I'm at.
Thank you, Representative Roblin, and you want that in the form of a motion?
Yeah, I will make a motion that we support with a letter. I think the letter has to be redrafted, and I would love to put some people who want to work on that with.
Representative Roblin has moved that we redraft the letter, and are there any objections?
Discussion.
Any comments?
Discussion.
Yes.
I think Paul Barnum used a phrase that I think should set the tone for the letter, and I'll paraphrase it. How long are we going to allow the federal government to mismanage Oregon forests? That's a great opening line.
So I would suggest that be a suggestion for the tone of this letter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I see Beth writing very rapidly, Senator. So any other comments
discussion? If the motion is to redraft the letter, I support that. But yeah. But to support the redrafted letter, I'd have to see it first.
We agree.
Thanks. Yeah, that's that's understood.
That's understood.
The letter will come back to you. Any objections to redrafting the letter? Seeing none, so moved. All right, now we're next on the panel. Introduce yourself, please.
Co-Chair Berger, Brett Brownscombe with the Governor's Office. We've been through the panel already, and I think we're all here to answer any further questions if there are any. If not, I know you have other business on the committee today.
So he's spoken. So we're ready to go to this one. All right. Thank you very, very much. And my apologies. I had to testify on a priority bill of mine that is moving along, and I hope that you'll excuse me for being late. Yes, Mr. McCott.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd like to make one other comment, and that's that this work that you've seen us present today and the other work the Federal Forest Advisory Committee Implementation Group is made possible by Oregon Solutions. Pete Dock, here in the front row, is here from Oregon Solutions today, and Oregon Solutions is made possible by your support from the legislature, so thank
yes,
you for that.
Yes, great program, Oregon Solutions. We've had some real success with that program, and it's a structure that is lends itself to coming to the bottom line and getting things done. So thank you so much for those comments. And thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
All
you.
Right, we'll move on now with an update from Curry County. And I believe we have two commissioners here.
Welcome this morning.
Good morning, Senator Berger and Co-Chair Berger and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing two of Curry County's finest to come before you this morning and testify on behalf of Curry County. We were asked to come and give you an update. Obviously, we've sent a letter to the governor's office letting them know that there's a possibility of some services might be returned. And also, it was our understanding that the panel would like an update on our citizens committee. I'm Commissioner George Rhodes, and with me today is Commissioner Bill Waddle. I'm going to take the first phase of the program this morning and give you an update on the letter that we sent to the governor and also to the members of both houses. And then Commissioner Waddle will talk about our Citizens Committee that we just recently got a report from. The board felt that it was necessary to give the governor's office an update on what potential services might be returned given the situation with Curry County. It was really refreshing to hear this morning that there's a sense of urgency here because we feel that management of our forest is the solution to our problem. We're going to be forced to take other actions, obviously, because of the times that we're looking at. When we look at down the road in 2013, Curry County will be off the cliff before that comes. So we have to come up with some solutions that might enable us to continue to provide services. Currently, we're looking at a budget shortfall of about 65% of our general fund budget, which is a small budget. It's only $5.1 million. But the $3 million shortfall that we currently have doesn't even address the liabilities that we have. We have an unemployment liability of somewhere around $3 million, and we have a PERS liability of somewhere around $7.6 million. So given those liabilities, we have a much bigger hole than just our $3 million budget hole, and we've got to come up with a solution for that. The public safety side of our budget is about 60%. So when we talk about the impacts of what losing 65% of our budget will be, obviously public safety is going to be the major impact. We currently only have, I believe, five road deputies on board, and Commissioner Wall is the liaison for that department, so when he starts to testify, he'll give you the exact numbers. But we can't continue to provide the services given the numbers we have. We have $2.1 million in known revenue to us, and our budget last year, we anticipated a budget of roughly having $1.5 million come from timber funds, but because there was an error in the calculations by BLM, it turns out that we only got $1 million. So we're short $500,000 already out of what we projected for income for this coming budget cycle. Now, there again, $500,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but when you only have a $5.1 million general fund working budget, that's substantial. So we're scrambling, frankly. We have been for 3 years. I've been a commissioner now for a little over 3 years, and this has been a priority for both Commissioner Wall and I for the last 3 years. We've been looking at how we could possibly not only cut, but where could we generate savings? And most importantly, how could we go about creating revenue resource? It's been suggested to us that perhaps we look at changing our governance model. It's been suggested to us that perhaps we should focus on zero budget, baseline budgeting. Well, I'm sorry, but changing budget methodology or changing governance is not going to fill a $3 million shortfall in your budget when it makes up 65% of your budget. So we're faced with the reality of looking at revenue-generating resources and putting the state on notice that we have shared services that we're going to have to return. We can no longer supplement them. We recently forgave a general fund loan that we had made to our public service or to our public health and human services department. It was $190,000. They're not ever going to be able to repay that back, but we're not going to be able to support them next year. We've recently supported our public services, our building maintenance, our building department, and inspection division. We've had to support them this last year in the tune of around $200,000, and there's no end in sight for that because of the decline in the building permits and the situations that are going on with our economy. We do not have those funds, so it's very likely that some of those services will be returned to the state. And I felt, as the chair last year, that it was important for the Board of Commissioners to be openly honest with the governor's office and make them aware of these situations so that there could be some preparation on behalf of the folks that support those services at the state level, and we could partner together. One of the things we've done is looked at the possibility of moving some of these services out to 501c3s. We're currently doing our due diligence in determining if we can move Health and Human Service out to a nonprofit agency. We're also looking at the possibility of changing our fee structure for public services so that we can generate some new incomes. But there again, those are going to solve small issues. They're not going to solve the budget problem we have, which is primarily funding our public safety. And our, you know, there's no way around the situation we're in other than creating a revenue source. We appreciate the willingness to listen to us this morning. And certainly we're here to answer any of your questions. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to Commissioner Waddle now.
All right. I think we'll move on before we take questions. Let's hear from both of you.
Chair Berger, committee members, Bill Waddle, Curry County Commissioner. We appointed 23 citizens to our Citizens Committee. It was a very intense 3 months. We had the cooperation of both AOC and state the consensus to facilitate those meetings. It culminated with a report to us on February 1st, just 3 weeks ago today. And the committee, it was very intense. There was a lot of information given to them. They had a lot of responsibilities. They had a lot of material to certainly weigh through and try to dissect and understand it. But in the final report, I think it's worth mentioning, and I call it the Wendy commercial version of for Curry County, not where's the beef, but where's the pork. A number of the committee members in that final briefing said that they expected to find $3 million in pork, overhead, inefficiencies, even fraud. They did not. In fact, they found that the Board of Commissioners had made most, if not all, of the budget cuts necessary to the point. So they came up with 19 recommendations. Just a week ago, we had our formal meeting, spent another day reviewing all 19 recommendations. Obviously, we had utilized resources, county council, other resources to
give us input and really understanding, as well as looking at all those recommendations. And I can tell you the 19 recommendations, the vast majority of those we are currently doing. I mean, everything from looking at vehicle maintenance and vehicle purchases and communicating with the unions and just on and on. All those things are ongoing and have been done by this board now for the last 3 years that I've been on the board. Of the 19 recommendations, there was one unique off-the-wall recommendation that I personally wasn't aware of at until they gave it to us. Suffice it to say, it has numerous legal challenges, some of which the legislature would probably have to take and approve before we can even go forward, and it's obviously not a very timely solution. Some of the recommendations included a modest tax proposal, a consolidation of law enforcement functions, a transit lodging tax, a sale of county assets, 911 consolidation. And each one of these, when we discussed them in open meeting, one of the things that we did was to try and prioritize these. Which ones make the most sense? What can be done in a timely manner? Which ones are good suggestions or good recommendations? But in the sense of timing, we're going to have to put those over here and consider those at a later point. So, the one that we concentrated on the most since the meeting a week ago was the one with a county-wide sales tax. And so we immediately got our county council to notify and ask questions of all the other county councils throughout the state of Oregon. He got a hold of Dan O'Brien, who is former county council in Washington County, who is now in private practice, that has some expertise in this area. Also contacted your own legislative budget officer, Paul Warner, who's been very helpful in providing input and suggestions and so forth. So we're on a very tight timeline if we're to bring that to the voters for May. If we hold off until November and another revenue solution doesn't materialize, to my colleague's statement as we will fall off the cliff. So that's what we're doing. We set up a timeline. We're actively looking at a sales tax. We have set up the parameters in terms of when we have to have it done, the first reading, the second reading, in order to make it to the May ballot if we make that final decision. The final decision has not been made yet. In terms of the budget preparations, of which we're going to have a meeting either the 28th or the 1st of March with our budget workshop, all department heads and all elected officials have been told to come up with a 35% budget reduction from this year until going forward in 12-13. I can tell you that I don't know if you met our sheriff, John Bishop. He's a pretty good-sized guy. And when he came over to my office that afternoon after I told him the fact that that's what he would have to do, he couldn't even sit down. He was very adamant that, Bill, I can't do it. He says, look, right now I have got $2.4 million of this year's budget. If you want me to cut 35%, that's $900,000. That takes me down to $1.5 million. He says, I'm already losing good people. I've already, everybody's out looking for a job. Everybody's got their resumes out. He's lost, I think, one correctional officer already. And then, obviously, where do we replace those officers? There is no secret. No one wants to come work for a county that they may only have 3 or 4 months of employment. We're down to 5 road deputies. I took a short ride with one yesterday morning before we came up here, and I can tell you, Curry County is 80 miles long on 101, and if
If we got a call up in the Langlois area and it had to go down to Harbor, you know, that's a good hour plus at you know, on a code one with lights and sirens to get mm-hmm. down there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sheriff Bishop, he says, Bill, I just I can't do it. I mean, I will go through the exercise. I said, well, you know, you and everybody else has to do this excruciating exercise because we have to be transparent. We have to provide clarity to everybody to demonstrate what we can and cannot do. You know, I use the phrase, you know, we talk about services, and of course we talk about shared mandated services. If we have to cut that budget by 35% to live within our means, and that is basically the $2.1 million of local revenue, and we actually have a million from this fourth payment of SRS, that's all we have to plan the budget for next year. And that's leaving about $1 million left in reserves, and that's it. That's all we have left in reserves right now. So going forward with about a $3 million budget, you know, Commissioner Rhodes already went over, you know, the exercise in doing that. But it's at least a 35% cut this year and then more the following year. But in terms of services, I'm going to use a new adjective on you. There won't be mandatory services. There won't be essential services. There won't be respectful services. There will be no basic services. The services will be unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we go through this paper exercise of a 35% budget, there'll probably be just an elected official or department head and maybe another person in that office as a caretaker to go in and turn on the lights, leave the heat off. We can't pay for that anymore. And sit there for 8 hours at a desk and try to figure out how they can get something positive done. That's what we're facing.
Well,
just like to turn it over for questions, ma'am.
Let me interject here. You know that being in local government is a little different because you're right there on Main Street. You're with the people all the time. And I think the stress factor of trying to face what you're facing at the same time in local government makes it extremely difficult. I have a couple of questions for you about your citizenry. When we were talking about being able to tap into the road funds, I was told that actually the people in your community are not interested in your using the road funds, and I want to clarify that on the record. Do you have any feeling about that? Do you know what the people in the county really want about that fund?
Chair Berger, yes. In fact, the commissioners all share that feeling. We would not want to tap into the road funds unless we had the ability to pay those funds back. Now, if we could use those funds as a bridge or a gap funding, if we had a means to pay those back, i.e. a sales tax, the federal government finally gets their act together and does something to give us some more funding, which they definitely have an obligation to do. I think it would be okay to take and utilize those funds as for bridge purposes only. But if we don't have the means to pay them back, that would not. All we would do was take another department down, and then we have any kind of a disaster, then we have no money to build a bridge or repair the roads.
Let me ask one other question, then, Mr. Rhodes, I have you answer. Are you optimistic about your ballot initiative that you were talking about, putting on the tax?
Again, Chair Berger, I can only relate some personal instances that I've been given by the citizens, and I will give you both a negative and a positive just to, so you get the feel of it. After church we have a coffee hour, and the positive side, I had a couple of senior citizens, ladies that come up to me and said, Bill, you know, I'm a widow, I'm on fixed income. You know, a property tax would just I couldn't afford a property tax, but you know, a sales tax, I could support that because it would be fair, it would be spread across everybody. It wouldn't be just the property owners that were obligated for something like that. And then I had another gentleman that I've known for a long time tell me, you know, and he's from former California, and he says, if we ever open the door and let any sales tax start, there's no end to it. And you just tax and tax and raise the tax and raise the tax. We're looking at somewhere between 2% and 3%. We're still gathering more information to see what that final figure would be. But it's part of keeping the public as informed as possible. And I went right back to his name is Bill also. I said, Bill, do you realize that you know, each and every time, if there was ever an additional amount of money or an additional percentage of sales tax or something like that, it's something the citizens have to vote on again. The county government cannot just say, okay, well, it's 3%, now it needs to be 4% or 6%, or heaven forbid, up to California, it's 8.25% and climbing. So that's the pro and the con of it. I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe it's 51-49 that there's an opportunity there for
well, the reason that I ask you is that I have an email that comes to me that gives me some optimism about some changes in tax reform here at the state level. Senator Johnson?
Thank you. What's your tantalizing out-of-the-box recommendation? That was just too intriguing to let just rest there. And then I have a serious question.
Thank you. Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, I hesitate to try to describe it. It's number 19 on your on your list, but it reminded me a little bit of a reverse mortgage scenario. It's where citizens could pay up front several years of taxes at a lower rate, and then that would be they would be in a position not to, if taxes were raised in the future, then they would be exempt for that.
Now the more serious question, I want to go back to the road funds, because as I recall the number, it is somewhere north of $100 million. Is that incorrect?
Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, that's incorrect. I believe there's a county to the east that might have $100 million, and I think that would be Klamath County in the road fund.
Yeah.
We have about 34 million, maybe 35 million in road reserves right now, and that's the sum of money, the correct sum of money.
And if I understood the answer that you gave to Senator Verger, you would not want to invade that right now.
Again, Co-Chair Verger and Senator Johnson, not unless we had the legal means to pay those monies back. In other words, you know, if a sales tax passed in May, obviously it would take time to bring that up to speed, so that would bring revenue into the county. Or if the government saw fit to give us a 1 or 2 year extension on secure rural schools at $1 million or $1.5 million or whatever it might be, then we would have an opportunity, we'd have the legal authority then to go ahead and borrow some funds there, and we could pay them back.
I just wanted clarity. Thank you.
Commissioner Rhodes, you wanted to interject something on the first round, so yes. I want to give you an opportunity to do that.
Madam Chair Berger and Senator Johnson, also I'd like to answer both your questions from my perspective. Historically, Commissioner Wall and I asked to be included in the current legislation that allows both Wayne County and Douglas County to fund a road deputy. We asked for that a little over a year ago. And when we presented that, the citizens of Curry County basically rebelled. You would have thought we were stealing money from their mother-in-law, and the mother-in-law was going to come live with them because we were taking that money. So what we decided was to, we decided not to pursue that. We had only suggested utilizing some of the interest rate off of that reserve to fund a road deputy. And there again, the citizens were, many, many of the citizens were very much against that. So we backed off of it. Commissioner Wall indicated that there would probably be a willingness if there was some vehicle to pay back some of those reserves, that the board might use them for bridge funding if there was a legislative process that allowed us to do that. And I think that would be supported by the board. And I also think that it's likely it would be supported by the citizens. But there again, only with the caveat that there would have to be a way to pay those monies back. Doesn't make sense to rob from Peter to pay Paul. We just can't. We can't afford to do that in Curry County. We would only bankrupt one entity to put us all out of business anyway. In regards to the tax, you asked the question, what was the fill? My wife and I run a business in Brookings, and I get to interact with a lot of the citizens, and I can tell you that the support for property taxes is minimal under any circumstance. The at least based on the chats I've had with the citizens. There's a realization that we have a low property tax. Everybody understands that. But at some point in time, with only 4% of our land mass really appropriate for a taxable land base, the tax would have to be so high that nobody would be able to afford it anyway. So the reality for us is to look at some other possible solution. And the impression I get from talking with most of the citizens is that it's right. It's a 50-50 chance that we can get a sales tax, but there's no chance for a property tax in Curry County increase currently, no matter how much education we do. And it's very likely a PAC would have to be formed to put that property tax measure out there and give plenty of information about the scenario. And as a general law county, the citizens need to know that as a board of commissioners, we can't raise that tax. They're the only ones that have the authority to change any tax measure in Curry County. So those things have to be put out there, and a lot of folks don't understand that. So one last comment. I found it very interesting, the testimony earlier this morning, and I go back to growing up on a ranch in Florida, a very fairly large ranch. And one thing I learned at a very early age, an unmanaged resource becomes a liability, and that's where our federal forests are right now for not only Curry County. We have 700,000 acres of land in Curry County that has not been managed properly for over 10 years. There's got to be a solution to that. And Senator Farrelly, I applaud you for saying, time is of essence here. We need to make something happen. Thank you.
Other questions for the commissioners? Senator Cruz.
An unmanaged resource is a liability. That's a good term. I like that. Thank you for bringing that to us. I hadn't heard it put in those terms. I kind of want to maybe put a slightly different face on it. Sheriff Bishop is an incredibly nice man, but he's intimidating as hell because he's really big, and he has a gun. But my question is, how many OSP road deputies are currently stationed in Curry County?
Chair Berger, Senator Cruz, I may be off by one here, but Sheriff Bishop has informed me that, in fact, OSP is cutting their force. I think it's either going from 6 to 4 or 4 to 2, but it's going down. It's not going up.
Okay, and Madam Chair, the reason for that question, because I knew the answer was 24/7 is an absolute myth in Curry County for public safety, and there's a lot of activities in the forest lands to the east of the cities, of the towns in Curry County, and also there to the west of the towns in Josephine County. It's called drug cartels, and they are very real and very scary. And when you look at the public safety functions that normally need to happen, we can't even cover those, and then you throw that into the mix, it means that we have a very dangerous situation, And, you know, and it's time that we here at the state level woke up to the very real possibilities of putting citizens at risk if we don't find solutions. So,
Senator Johnson?
Well, Senator Cruz has put a very fine point on the lack of harmony sometimes between this building and the counties. We're sitting here listening to you describe a very dire scenario, and while I don't sit on the Public Safety Subcommittee, I don't know the current status of funding for OSP. I have heard rumors that we have just finished a class of either 4 or 6, and they'll be among the first to be laid off after we've just spent $100,000 roughly. I don't know exactly how much, but we are now the training grounds for Idaho and California and Washington that want to come and pick off these highly trained professionals that we've trained and can't use. You're risking having a really bad behavior in the woods with the drug cartels, and I believe every single word of it. It's happening in just about every forested area in the absence of adequate public safety. I think many of us subscribe to the theory that one of the first responsibilities of government is to pay for public safety before we just descend into lawlessness. But we are cutting troopers in this building at the same time that you have no adequate public safety for your citizens, and that disconnect I just can't get past.
Senator Perioli?
Thank you, Madam Chair. About 10 years ago, maybe it was longer now, my memory isn't as good as it was, I attended a press conference in Washington, D.C. at the headquarters of the Wilderness Society. And there was a consortium of environmental groups that was announcing their absolute dedication to the principle that they would protect old growth and spotted owls and, by extension, really halt timber harvesting in the coastal areas and other places in Oregon. And the warning that they gave then for rural communities was move or starve. And they've been working toward that goal quite effectively for that period and to this day. And I think this is what they meant by move or starve. The bankrupting of communities will create wonderful wildlife habitat. It's a goal they've cherished and worked on. Madam Chair, I have a question for the panel. You know, Oregon has exported much over the years, but one of the things we export best is taxpayers to Clark County, Washington. And it's because we have the highest marginal income tax rates among the states, very high inheritance tax, and a high capital gains tax. What's your confidence level that folks in Curry County faced with the idea that you might have a sales tax just move on up the road to buy their groceries and gas and the other taxables that they might consume?
Not that easy to do.
Co-Chair Berger, Senator Ferrioli. We're looking at a modest sales tax of 2 to 3%. Given gas prices these days, I think just about anybody could figure that. Well, yeah, they could travel 100 miles or 200 miles or make a round trip, and they'd pay more in gas than the sales tax is going to affect them. The Fred Meyer store down in Brookings is a good size store, and I can tell you that on any given day, and I verified this with both the manager at their gas station as well as the manager inside the store, that at least 50% of the license plates out in the parking lot and that go through the gas station don't have an Oregon license plate. It seems like it's got a CA on it, California.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes.
So the Californians are avoiding their sales tax.
Co-Chair Berger and Senator Farioli. So with them looking at 8.25% and within various counties, it's higher than that. A modest 2 to 3% sales tax and come up to Oregon and. I don't think that's gonna phase them.
Madam Chair, Senator, if I may answer that question, I think if you look at the combination of the current property tax and the sales tax combined, we're still the cheapest place on the West Coast to live. and we have something that no one else has. We have, you know, 20-something percent of the Oregon coastline in Curry County, and it's the most beautiful coastline you can find anywhere. So whenever you choose to live in a place like Curry County, which is 2 hours from anywhere, you understand that you're remote and that those things are going to be there. And our positive, our negative aspects have to become our positive aspects. And people have to understand that when they need services, if we're going to be able to provide them, we're going to need to be able to pay for them. And that's going to allow us, that modest property tax will allow us to do that. One thing that your comment regarding the environmentalists, obviously they're not very astute when it comes to wildlife habitat, because if you don't have mixed forest with varied terrain and varied vegetation with some open lands, you're not going to have a very varied wildlife habitat, because large deer and moose and elk will not stay in a crowded forest where they can't navigate and eat. So they don't really have a very good understanding of what managing a forest is really all about.
Well, I think we could converse for quite a while. Senator Johnson has one last question, and then I'm going to need to move on. Thank you, Senator Johnson.
We had the opportunity to speak with one of your colleagues about the possibility of a golf course that had been discussed, and the possibility that the developer was still there and would be willing to continue talking to Curry County. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if there's a specific role that the state could play. There was a question about a property swap, or I certainly don't know the details, but is any of that still in play or a possibility?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, it is. I've had some recent discussions, and there's still interest on two developers. What the details of the project was, the county owns approximately 600 acres of land adjacent to an area called Florist Lake. It is a pristine area. It's beautiful, and the state owns about 1,200 acres there. That gets minimal use. They have no restroom facilities. They do have some trails that are utilized a very small amount of time. And, you know, the plan that I had put forth was to build two world-class golf courses there with an interpretive center to service the parks, some 20 to 25 miles of ADA-compliant trail systems, and really to protect the environment there. We have a gorse issue there. We'd be able to control that spread of gorse on the park lands. And at some point in time, it was projected about 5 years down the road to have generated about $2 million in income for Curry County. It would have been a $100 million investment, would have created 400 new jobs, and it would have created a world-class park, golf course community with no residential construction. It would have helped tie in the South Oregon coast to be competitive. Would have probably brought more people to Bandon Dunes. You're very aware of the success of Bandon Dunes and it's had what the impact, the positive impact it's had on Curry County or on Coos County. And it's very likely that this would have enhanced that. And so there is still some there's some interest in it. It's about 250 people were extremely vocal, very well organized, and well, let's say they were the ones that spoke for the rest of the citizens of Curry County and convinced everyone that it wasn't the best interest of Curry County to move forward with that project. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that it's still in the best interest of Curry County, and I think with the right support and the right opportunities, we could pursue that and still make that project a viable project.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for being here this morning. And I'm going to have to move on in the agenda. The clock is ticking.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
Thank you, members of the committee, for allowing us to testify this morning.
I'm going to call Eric Schmidt to give us an update on the federal legislation. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Senator. Thank you, Co-Chair Berger, and members of the task force, Eric Schmidt, with the Association of Oregon Counties. Last Thursday afternoon, the House Natural Resources Committee, that's the U.S. House Natural Resources Committee, passed H.R. 4019, which is called the Federal Forest County Revenue Schools and Jobs Act of 2012 by a vote of 26 to 17. This bill is called the Hastings Bill after Chair Doc Hastings of the Natural Resources Committee. He's a congressman from Washington State. And basically, legislation does not include the ONC proposal that Congressmen DeFazio and Schrader and Walden had put forth. So it is going forth, and it could be on the floor of the United States House of Representatives as early as next Tuesday. We anticipate that at that time, Congressman DeFazio will offer an amendment to the bill, and it would be the ONC proposal that he and Congressman Schrader held a news conference on that afternoon. And this is their proposal, and this is H.R. 4019, and the ONC proposal is about three times longer than the bill itself. But Congressman DeFazio is insistent that that this bill, if it doesn't make it into final legislation of H.R. 4019, will be a standalone bill, and he will introduce it as such. And Congressman Walden and Congressman Schrader are both co-sponsors of that. On the Senate side, we understand that there has been movement to take the one-year reauthorization of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act and place it in the transportation bill on the Senate side. And we understand that there's also some movement on the House side to include a one-year reauthorization of Secure Rural Schools in the House transportation bill. But I learned today, just today, that both of those transportation bills are in a little bit of trouble and may not be moving through this session of Congress. Going back to the House side, Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley both said that they liked the ONC proposal that was put forth by Congressman Schrader and DeFazio, and they didn't indicate, however, if they would try to move it forward in the Senate, but they are strongly being urged to do so. Congressman Walden is doing everything that he can in his leadership position on the Republican side of the House to move that forward. So we're hopeful that the vote on the House side will be dramatic enough that it will catch the Senate's attention and that this bill could move over to the Senate. On the other hand, given the politics in Washington, D.C. today, if this bill does pass the House, that's probably where it will end.
So, Eric, Senators Wyden and Merkley said they support the DeFazio-Schrader bill, but do they see any chance for it in the Senate? Because we've been hearing all along that the House may not be the problem, but the Senate would be.
Co-Chair Verger, I don't think they used the word support. I think they found it intriguing. They found a lot of interest in it, a lot that they could like about it. But I think the ONC proposal, along with the Hastings bill, if it gets to the Senate, would meet a roadblock, and a certain senator from New Mexico, Jeff Bingaman, who has indicated in the past that he's just not in favor of this legislation at this time.
Okay. Questions?
I got a question.
Yes.
Senator Thank you, Chair Verger. The question I got is kind of a synopsis of the Hastings bill. My understanding is that it impacts federal forests. Could you just kind of give us a real 30-second briefing on what actually is in 4019?
Thank you, Co-Chair Verger, Senator Girod. It creates a county school and revenue trust to provide a dependable source of revenue for rural counties that currently depend on secure rural schools. So what that would do would be to manage the forests, and it would require that those forests produce up to 60% of the revenue that they had prior in the years 1980 to 2000, and that would go into a trust that would then work on paying back counties for the expenses that they have. It would also give counties a certain amount of leverage when it comes to the management of the forests in their counties. It also provides for a two-year bridge funding so that the management practices can get into actual practice and start working toward generating the revenue. And the funding for that two-year bridge, we had understood that it was at the 2009 level of the former Secure Rural Schools payments, but on second reading, it could be a different one-year or one-and-a-half-year bridge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So basically, it's a forest management bill with some funding to get everybody through the hard part.
Just one point of clarification.
Yes, spell it.
So, but we're talking federal forest land. This doesn't involve ONC land. Is that correct?
There is a provision in Senator Berger, Senator Girard, there is a provision in there for BLM lands in Western Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much, Eric. The federal legislation, I think, is so important. I think that the Hastings bill just kind of came out quickly before the Schrader and DeFazio bill could get moving, so that just probably is going to bear watching. All right, Representative Barnhart, you're on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to report that House Bill 4176 and 4175 and 4177 had their public hearings yesterday in the House Revenue Committee. They're set for a work session this afternoon. Both of them have amendments. I expect both to move to the floor. The amendment on 4175 essentially changes the bill from a qualifications bill to a list bill, including in the list includes Curry County, Douglas, Josephine, Klamath Lane, and Linn counties. And it does add new sections that would allow a county that chose to do that to borrow money from the county road fund to put into another fund for patrol purposes to be repaid within 2 years. Instead of simply moving the money, or should I say, in addition to the authority in the bill that would allow a county to move the money from the road fund to a fund to be used to be expended for patrol. So that would essentially give Curry County the choice to do either of those two things. You never know when legislators meet what is going to happen, but my suspicion is that this will go to the floor. Both of these bills will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 4176 was heard yesterday in rules. It's not scheduled for a work session as yet, at least as of my last check. I'm not one of the co-chairs of that committee, so you'd have to check with them about the details of that. The amendment in that bill would add the sheriff and the district attorney to the county side of the members of the special committee. Still requires a double majority vote for the recommendation of that process, but it essentially establishes the work group that this committee contemplated. And there were no negative comments during the hearing, so I anticipate, assuming that it gets scheduled for a work session, that one will move as well. But I know less about that because while I'm a member of that committee, I'm not one of the leaders of it.
Okay. Questions? Senator Johnson.
Yes, please. Representative Barnhart, you've already said on House Bill 4176 that you're not at the core of where the decisions are being made, but are you aware of any discussions that would suggest some kind of financial support to actually do these boards? It is going to take some amount of staff work, I would think, to pull the board together, to exercise the convening function. You might have to actually enlist someone with experience in local government. I'm thinking of retired city managers or somebody who spoke local government fluently, mm-hmm. to just do the staff work. And it strikes me that to pass the bill without any of the requisite funding to help deliver it on the ground successfully might be short-sighted, and I would just commend for your consideration the possibility of thinking about where money might come from if you needed some kind of mediation. There will be a fair amount of work, just staff work, to do. The counties probably, I'm looking at Mr. MacArthur, have a limit to how much they could contribute or cause to make happen. But I'm thinking about, you know, some of the retired city managers, Steve Bryant, Jim Johnson, people like that who have enormous expertise in working with local government. They're lovely people and very generous people, but I don't think they'd want to do this kind of work without some remuneration, at least for expenses. So I offer that for your consideration.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, for that. I would note Section 3 of the bill establishes a fiscal distress counties fund. It requires that the counties pay half of the cost of administering the fiscal assistance board. It also allows that fund to accept monies derived from any other source, public or private, and it's to be used by the governor for the purpose of establishing and administering the fiscal assistance boards for fiscally distressed counties. So at least we're partway there. I think the suggestions that you've made are great ones. I don't know that you can put them in the bill, but I think the mechanism is in the bill that would allow the governor to do that.
Well, Madam Chair, after listening to Curry County's presentation this morning, asking them to contribute to one of these boards is a little like running around the battlefield bayoneting the wounded. I am fairly concerned about asking them to bear a burden. We ought to just at least think about it. There may be some sources of funds. At least give it some thought, because these fiscal boards aren't going to function without some pretty intense staff work, I would assume.
And if I could just
yes.
follow up on that. That of course, this bill, if I recall correctly, has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
And the point of that, of course, is to deal with precisely the kind of question that you are raising now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Rules Committee is likely to get into that particular question very closely.
I just wanted to get it on the record, and at least,
yeah.
As Senator Verger, I love your phrase, lift it up for everybody's consideration. So,
all right. Is that it, Representative Barnhart?
Madam Chair, thank you.
All right, very good. Mr. MacArthur, would you like to make any comments at all about any of this?
Chair, members of the committee, I think that these are incremental tools that we're putting in place that can help deal with the crisis that we're facing. They are not solutions in total, but we appreciate the legislature's consideration in moving these forward in a sort of out of the normal process fashion.
Oh.
Thank you.
Beth, reminds me you need to introduce yourself.
Oh, Mike MacArthur, Association of Counties.
All right. If there's nothing else to come before the body and no other business, I'll call the meeting adjourned.